We're holding at the top of Lamed Aleph, Lamed Aleph. Further on this topic of collecting firewood on Yom Tov, Mishnah says, "Mevi'in etzim min asadeh." You're allowed to get wood. You're allowed to bring wood in from the field. Obviously, we're talking about wood that's detached from the ground already, from a field that's within the tchum. Min amachunas, but only from what's gathered together, because otherwise, Rashi says it would be an issue of muksa. Some other Rishonim talk about the idea. Tosfos mentions it in connection with the Karpif, that there might be a different issue if you gather it around in the field. It'll be an issue of ma'amer. The fourth of the 39 malachas in ma'amer is gathering like gathering sheaves into a bundle or whatever. Similarly, over here, if you have a field, there's a place where wood grows on the trees, where the branches grow on trees. If you were to then gather the pieces of wood there together, it would be an issue of ma'amer. Well, Shabbos, you can't use wood anyway. What are you going to use it for on Shabbos? We're talking about Yom Tov.
So why does the Mishnah have to remind them?
That's why. You can only take Minam Achunas. We'll see, though, in the Mishnah that it's not so simple. In the Gemara, we'll see that it's not so simple, actually.
It's so
straightforward. Yeah. Well, Minam Karpif, but from a Karpif, you can take wood even from what's scattered around. A Karpif, we learned back in Erevin, is an enclosed area. It's not an area that's enclosed for living in. It's not like a yard. A yard we're going to talk about in a couple of Mishnayos, I think. A yard we're going to talk about in a couple of Mishnayos. That's a different issue.
Right.
Here, which our Karpif is more like in modern terms, it might be like a playground or some area that's enclosed like that. It's not meant for a field. It's not planting. It's not for growing things in. But it's not meant for living in either. It's not meant for living purposes. But that you're allowed to collect even when I'm a fuzzer, even from what's scattered. Rashi says the reason is because since it's a karpif, since it's surrounded by a wall, and as we'll talk about in the Gemara, it has a lock on it, so therefore it's like it's an enclosed area. So everything that's in it you have in mind to maybe use on Yom Tov. Tosfos says that Tosfos also points out you don't have the issue of ma'amer because ma'amer only applies to if you're collecting the stuff where it actually grows. Wood doesn't grow in a karpif. Yeah. Ezo karpif, what's the definition of a karpif for this purpose? Kol shesamach le'ir, anything which is close to the city. Rashi says it means very close to the city, and Mephoshim say that what Rashi means on that is it's within 70 and two-thirds amos from the city, which is the definition that we learned back in Erevin is considered sort of like an extension of the city. There are other Rishonim who say differently, that it could be that samach le'ir could be even a little further out.
Closed lot.
Yeah, closed lot, basically. Yeah, that would be a good way of putting it. Divrei Rabbi Yehuda, that's what Rabbi Yehuda says. Rabbi Yossi says, no, kol shenichnasim lo b'pesachas, anything that you go in using a key, in other words, that it's got a lock and you have to enter it with a key, v'afilu b'seret tum Shabbos, even if it's anywhere in the tum Shabbos, so much further than 70 amos away from the city. Which the Gemara is going to talk about. Is Rabbi Yossi saying it has to have a lock, whereas Rabbi Yehuda is saying it doesn't have to have a lock, it just has to be within 70 amos of the city? Or is Rabbi Yehuda saying it has to have a lock and it has to be close, and Rabbi Yossi is just saying as long as it has a lock, then we're good. So we'll discuss that in the Gemara. So, Omer Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel, the Gemara says, Rabbi Yehuda says in the name of Shmuel, Ein Mevi'in Eitzim Elam Min HaMechunasin Shebekarpif. You can only bring wood on Yom Tov from the wood that is collected together in the karpif. So not like the Mishnah had said that you can bring from the karpif even if it's scattered around. No, or you can still bring from the karpif only if it's all together.
Within the karpif.
Yes. Question is, the Gemara says, V'anam Tanan Min HaKarpif Afilam Min HaFuzarin. But we said in the Mishnah that you can bring from a karpif even if it's scattered. Only in a sodeh did it have to be together.
Right.
The answer is Masnissin Yechidahi. Our Mishnah is a Das Yachid. Our Mishnah is only according to one individual opinion. The Tanya, the Omer of Shimon Allah, when Nechelku Beshama Besil Alam Fuzorim Shabasadis Shain Mavian, Beshama and Besil do not disagree about scattered wood in the field that you can't bring it, because first of all you have the issue of Mukta, and second of all you have the issue of Ma'amer. Valam Chonosin Shabakaiprof Shimavian, and they both agree about the stuff that's collected together in the Kaiprof that you're allowed to bring. What is the machlokas about? Where it's scattered in the karpif, or where it's collected together in the field. There, Bishama says you can't bring them. Bishama says you can. So our Mishnah, which is saying that you can bring from the collected stuff in the karpif, or from the scattered stuff in the karpif, or from the collected stuff in the field, that is Reb Shimon ben Elazar's understanding of what Bishama says. Evidently, the Chachamim disagree with him. The Raita doesn't say so, but that seems to be the implication. If he has to say this, then it means the Chachamim disagree on what the Machlokas is. So they would say then that even where it's collected together in a Karpif, you still have the issue. Granted, you don't have the issue of Ma'amer, but you still have the issue that unless it's collected together, that it's considered Mukta.
That's their understanding.
Right. And that's what Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel is saying when he says that you can only take wood from what's collected together in the Karpif. That is according to that understanding of Ritzilu, yeah. Of the Chachamim, right? Amar Rava, Alei Kanim v'Alei Gfanim, as far as bamboo leaves or grape leaves, even though they are all collected together, even though they're all collected together and sitting over there, but you have a problem. Since if the wind kicks up, it'll scatter them because they're very lightweight. Then they're considered like scattered, therefore they're also. Oh, so the issue is not so much an issue of mukta, because over here, for example, you had a pile of them before Yom Tov. You didn't mean for them to be mukta. But the issue is that we don't want you going around the karpif and gathering a piece here or a piece there, not so much because of ma'amer, it's not a malacha, but rather just because it's a lot of tircha on Yom Tov. It's a lot of unnecessary tircha, and we don't want you doing it on Yom Tov. It's like Odin the Choyl, like the things that we were talking about in the last two days, right?
It's not really tircha, it's Odin the Choyl.
Well, they're somewhat the same. They're related, yeah. So therefore, so that was why the Chachamim were saying that Bitzilul says you cannot collect from the Kaifrif, not because of an issue of Mukta, but because of Odin Choyl. And similarly, we hear that Rava is saying the same thing as far as these leaves. It's also, even though you made a pile of them before Yom Tov, so there's no issue with Mukta, but there is an issue that you're going to be having to gather them one here, one there on Yom Tov, and it's Tircha. However, the Afnach Monam Esmal Alayhu, but if you put down a Keli before Yom Tov on top of them to weigh them down, Shapur Dummy, then it's fine, because then obviously they're not going to blow around. Then there's no Tircha involved.
When
no. In other words, before Yom Tov, you brought out, let's say, a board or something, or a bowl or something, and you brought out a bowl, let's say, and you put it upside down on top of the leaf pile, or just something to weigh it down.
Sorry.
Yeah, whatever, something to weigh it down, so that it won't blow all over the place.
Obviously,
so then it's fine.
Why?
That's the point.
Not very obvious.
Well, that's the point. Even though you have one case where you're not allowed to, but then you have another case where you're allowed to use these leaves. Yeah. No, so that's the thing. It's not just enough to pre-prepare it. Pre-preparing it would be you waste it into a pile before Yom Tov.
No,
that's not good enough. Pre-prepare it by making sure, right, with a tarp or a covering or whatever, right, yeah. Then the Mishnah had said, Ezehu karpif v'cholo. We had a machlokas in the Mishnah. What is the definition of a karpif? We had Rabbi Yehuda says if it's close to the city, and we had Rabbi Yossi says that if you go into it using a key.
So is this the part of the halacha, actually, of the discussion?
So yes, the halacha is like what Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel, so the two different things, that when you're collecting wood, it can only be from what's collected together before Yom Tov. If you have to gather it around in the karpif and certainly in the field, then it would be Yom Tov. Well, no, we're talking about wood, because, well, again, with wood you have issues of mukta, and you have issues of mukta, and even if it's a karpif, so there's no issue of mukta, there's still this issue of tircha. And if it's in the field, you have even another problem. You have the problem of mukta. And if it's in a field, in addition, like Tosfos said, you have the issue of ma'amer.
Well, let's say you had wood is the tzorech ha'chametz, right?
Right.
Why we allow it?
Well, that's actually, we're going to talk in the next Mishnah about that when we talk about chopping wood. Wait. But yeah, according to some Rishonim, yeah, it's a chametz, yeah.
So if you had small tanks of, let's say, gas or gasoline or a first stove or something like that, if you that is scattered all around the karpif.
So maybe, I don't know, would you be allowed to pick them up? I don't know. You only need them one at a time anyway, right?
But well, that's the point.
Right, you only need them one at a time. I don't know why you'd want to gather a bunch of them together anyway. That might be like carrying those bottles of wine that we talked about yesterday, where it looks like you're preparing a lot of it for after Yom Tov. Yeah, so that's as far as the wood, and then as far as the leaves, yeah, if you have them piled but before Yom Tov and you put a tarp over them, then you're good, yeah. Mishnah said, Ezehu karpif v'cholo, what's the definition of a karpif? And we have the Tzmachlokas Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi. So, Yiboyel, they had a question. Heichi ka'amar, what exactly is Rabbi Yossi saying? is he saying Kol Shasamach Le'ir Behudi Islay Pesach? What is Rabbi Yehuda saying, first of all? Is Rabbi Yehuda saying Kol Shasamach Le'ir, that any Karpif which is close to the city, let's say, like we said, within seven Yamas, Behudi Islay Pesach, but that is only, when are you allowed to gather wood from it, only if it also has a lock? So you need both, and you need to be close to the city and have a lock. And then Rabbi Yossi is saying, I agree, it has to have a lock, but it doesn't have to be close to the city, it can even be further away. And the point is, now Rabbi Huda doesn't say anything about a lock, but according to this way of looking at it, we would assume most Karpathos have a lock. So when Rabbi Huda is saying, Ezer Karpath, Kol Shasamach Le'ir, it's like it's a given that it has a lock. That's one possible way of looking at it. That's a given that a Karpath usually has a lock and you have to enter over the key. So therefore, Rabbi Huda has no reason to mention it. He just mentions the point about it being close to the city. And Rabbi Yossi is saying, since it has a lock, then it's okay even if it's further away.
So you're saying all houses have roofs?
Yes. Or maybe it means like this. Kol Shasamach Le'ir, Rabbi Huda is saying that you're allowed to take wood from a Karpath as long as it's close to the city, bein de isle pesachas, bein de lesle pesachas, whether it has a lock or not, so it doesn't matter even if it doesn't have a lock, but also Rabbi Yossi l'meimer, afilu b'seres Tchum Shabbos, Rabbi Yossi is coming in one way to be meikel, saying that it can be further away, it can be within the Tchum Shabbos, but v'davka de isle pesachas, but on the other hand, he's being machmer in a way, only if it has a lock. But if it doesn't have a lock, then even if it's close to the city, maybe Rabbi Yossi would be saying you're not allowed to bring from it. Because again, what's the whole idea? We're saying, why are you allowed to take from a Karpath? Because anything that's in the Karpath, you're not machzeh midaisa, because you know it's an enclosed area, it's a protected area. There's no need, right? There's no need to collect it before Yom Tov, because I can always go there and pick it up on Yom Tov.
You're the only one to have access to this.
Basically. So that would be the point then. If it doesn't have a lock, maybe then. Tashma, come in here, mid katani, let's consider, what does the mission actually say? Rabbi Yitzchak, kol shenichnasim loy b'pesachas, that any karpath that you go in using a lock, v'afilu b'seres tchum Shabbos, even if it is within a tchum Shabbos. Shmamino, which proves, Rabbi Yitzchak tauti l'kulak b'amar, which goes to show that, first of all, it means from what Rabbi Yossi is saying, we can deduce what Rabbi Yehuda was saying. That Rabbi Yehuda was saying that Rabbi Yehuda was saying it doesn't. It only needs to be within 70 amos. It does not need to have a lock.
According to the previous version, it automatically assumes it has a lock.
No, that was according to the first version. But since Rabbi Yossi is mentioning this business about a pesachas, about a lock, then it means that according to Rabbi Yehuda, you don't need. Let's look at the Rashi. Tauti l'kulakom. That'll make it a little clearer. Tauti l'kulakom, a climber. In other words, midu Rabbi Yossi nishmel Rabbi Yehuda lav tavayu boi. From what Rabbi Yossi is saying, we can deduce that Rabbi Yehuda does not require both of them. Rabbi Yossi b'tauti akir. Rabbi Yossi is actually saying a double kula. Demachshu b'samuch v'loy pesachas v'pesachas v'loy samuch. He says that mutter that it's allowed if it's close to the city, even if it doesn't have a lock, and if it has a lock, even if it's not close. Namely, the Shamin and Rabbi Yehuda to come across some of here. Rabbi Yossi is being mako on both things. In other words, that's one or the other. He's saying as long as it's either within 70 amos or it has a lock, then you're good. Why the Shamin and Rabbi Yehuda? Because we see that Rabbi Yehuda to come, that he says in the mission, a kosher some of here, that as long as the Karpath is close to the city, bein de isle pesachas, bein de lesle pesachas, whether it has a lock or not, then it's mutter, because Rabbi Yehuda didn't say anything about locks. But Amale Rabbi Yossi, and Rabbi Yossi is telling him, Kol sheyesh lepesachas, anything that has a lock, afilu hu b'sichat tchum, even if it's within the tchum, is mutter. And ve'isamuch leboi pesachas. And on the other hand, if it's close, then it doesn't need a lock at all. So in other words, he's saying, when it's close, I agree with you that it's okay. I'm not going to be machmir over what you're saying about requiring a lock because it's close to the city. But I'm being mako. I'm saying that you can go even beyond that. You can go even as long as if it has a lock, then you can go even further out. You're saying a lock doesn't make a difference. I'm saying a lock does make a difference, but within 70 amas, you don't need a lock.
And if it's further within the tone of 70 amas?
If it's within 70 amas, Rabbi Yossi is saying you don't need a lock. That Rabbi Yehuda agrees to.
Right.
That's what we're saying. Because Rabbi Yossi is mentioning a lock, that implies that Rabbi Yehuda did not need a lock. That Rabbi Yehuda was saying, I require it to be within 70 amas, somochlair, but I don't care about a lock or not. And Rabbi Yossi is telling him, I agree with you about that. I also hold, though, that if it has a lock, then it's okay for it to be even further out, up to Tzchum Shabbos. So that shows that Rabbi Yossi is saying both l'kulas. He's saying one or the other. Shema Mina, that proves it. Amar Rav Sala, Amar Rav Yirmiyah, Halacha Rav Yossi l'Hakol. So Rav Sala says in the name of Rav Yirmiyah, indeed the Halacha is like Rav Yossi, to be makel, in other words, that we accept this understanding of Rav Yossi, but based on the wording of the Mishnah, that it's one or the other, it's fine.
So, within the 70.
Within the 70, whether it has a lock or not,
right.
And within 2,000 amas, as long as it has a lock.
After a tum, we're not talking about.
Beyond the tum, obviously, it's not relevant. Yeah, you can't carry anyway. Tosfos has a long discussion over here based on Tosfos also discusses based on a different girsa in the Gemara here, which Rashi had in front of him but didn't like. A different way of looking at the understanding of what Rabbi Yossi is saying exactly. The upshot of it is that basically, Rashi seems to be saying, because what it is Rashi comes out saying, kind of, that we mentioned two possibilities of what Rabbi Yossi means, and the Gemara kind of ended up with a third one, which is kind of a combination of the two of them, that he doesn't require a lock and he doesn't require a Tum Shabbos, just one or the other. Whereas Tosfos' explanation is more that Rabbi Yossi comes out saying that you always do need a lock. It's just that you always do need a lock. It's just it can be further out than a Tzum Shabbos. I think that's the gist of what Tosfos is. It can be further. No, it can be up to a Tzum Shabbos, but it does have to have a lock. Yeah.
So how do you explain
them up like? So then that's what it is. Then that's because I'm saying because they have a different girsa in the Gemara as well. Mishnah says, "Ein mevakin etzim." You're not allowed to chop wood on Yom Tov. Lo min hakodesh, not from beams. Lo min hakodesh shenishbura be Yom Tov, and not from a beam that broke on Yom Tov. Mevakin means to chop wood. Now, right now, at this point, the Gemara is going to start with the assumption that what we mean is you're not allowed to chop wood on Yom Tov, period. So you're not allowed to chop from beams because those you didn't set aside for firewood, and not even even though it's a beam, let's say even before Yom Tov you thought of using it for firewood, you're not allowed to, and all the more so you're not allowed to use a beam that broke on Yom Tov because then it was mukta at the beginning of Yom Tov.
So you're not allowed to chop on Yom Tov.
Wait, the Gemara is going to challenge that, but wait, that's going to be the initial assumption,
right.
Because the Mishnah continues. Ve'en mevakim loy bekodim v'loy bemageir v'loy bemagol. You are not allowed to chop wood on Yom Tov not using a kaudrum, which means an axe, v'loy bemageir or a saw. Veloy b'magol or sickle, like they use for harvesting wheat, but apparently you can use it to, it's like a hand saw kind of, you can use it to cut wood as well. El b'kofis, but only with a cleaver.
Cardam is
an axe.
Magera
is a saw.
A
saw. Magol is a sickle, a rounded blade. Not chop, but like cut. A saw you don't chop with either. A saw
pieces.
No. The same way as a saw, you would be sawing the wood
in
smaller pieces, and you can't do that. The same thing with a sickle, you could also.
You could do that.
It's possible. All of those things are considered. Rashi says all of those things are klivumon. They're all professionals. They're all professional utensils. Therefore, they're also. As opposed to a cleaver is a cleaver, which is used by butchers. It's not really. It's not really such a klivumon. I mean, it's used by butchers, but it's not normally used on wood. Wait, that's what the Gemara is going to discuss. First, the Mishnah seems to be saying you can't chop wood at all.
That's
then
right.
It's telling us how you're allowed to chop
that's
it. Right. That's the stira. So that's the first thing the Gemara asks. V'ha'amrit
right.
Reisha, ein mevakin kral. Didn't the Reisha say that you're not allowed to chop wood at all?
Right.
Which sounded like it was a matter of malacha.
Exactly.
Yeah. The Mishnah is missing words. What it needs to be saying is like this. The first part of the Mishnah, when we're saying you're not allowed to chop wood from a beam, etc., is not because of a malacha, but rather because of a mukta. So therefore, ein mevakin min asavar shokardus, you're not allowed to chop wood from a from beams that are laid out for building. Savar shokardus is that they're laid out ready to be built. Because savar means like a layer of the lemon akodesh in ishbar of yamtiv, and also not from a beam that broke on yamtiv. So the savar shokardus would be not allowed as a matter of muktzah because muktzah machmas chaser and kis. You're not going to use expensive beams like that you meant for building. You're not going to chop them up for firewood. That's what we're saying. It's not a matter of malacha. It's a matter of mukta. And the kodesh and ishbar b'yomtov is a matter of mukta because bein hashmashes, it was not meant for kindling. Bein hashmashes, it was still meant for building or as part of a building or whatever. Even Reb Shimon would agree to that. Even Reb Shimon, who doesn't hold a mukta, would agree to that because before yomtov, you didn't expect it was going to break. If the building was shaky, and if you saw already before Yom Tov that the corridor was starting to weaken, then maybe Reb Shimon would allow. We talked about that actually earlier.
But it's not a matter of mukta. Any wood is mukta, regardless of what.
Why is any wood mukta?
No, the first enclosure.
No, forget about the enclosure. They were talking.
Not an enclosure. I mean, a wood of a certain size, 7 feet.
So that's what we're saying. If the beam, for example, is meant for building, yes, you would expect to use it for building. Therefore, it's mukta for any other purpose. But if it's, for example, let's take a simple example. Let's say the beam had broken before Yom Tov, which actually is the next thing we're going to say. If the beam broke before Yom Tov, there's nothing more you can do with it. All you can do at this point is chop it up for firewood. So fine, that's when you're allowed to chop it up. Then there's no issue of mukta. That's what it's saying. So the first part of the Mishnah is saying you're not allowed to chop, meaning because of mukta. And then, but you're allowed to break up a beam that was broken erev Yom Tov. And when you're breaking up this beam, you're not allowed to chop it using an axe or a saw or with an axe or a sickle or a saw. It's only with a cleaver. So Rashi had said that Rashi used the expression actually it looks like you're doing malacha with it. Right.
It looks
like you're doing malacha with it. Right. Let's get to the two dots, and then I'll talk about a few different reasons why Mephoshim say, so why are you allowed to chop this wood on Yom Tov? You could have chopped it out Yom Tov. Tani Nami Hachi, we learn similarly in a Braisa, Ein Mevakin Eitzim Loimina Savash or Kodos. You're not allowed to break up wood on Yom Tov from a layer of beam. Loimina Kodos and Ishbar of Yom Tov, and not from a beam that broke on Yom Tov. Lefishenim and Amuchan, because neither of these things is ready-made. Both of them are mukta, in other words. So therefore, we see that the first part of our Mishnah also is disallowing it on the grounds of mukta. No, but again, even according to Reb Shimon holds a mukta machas certainty.
Right.
So therefore, he'd hold of the pile of beans. And the kodesh and ishbar, b'yomtiv, is mukta because you didn't expect it at the beginning of yomtiv. There's no yoshev or matzapa. We talked about yesterday, for example, that a person expects that at some point the candle is going to go out, so the oil will be available, etc. But here, you don't expect that the beam is going to break in the middle of yomtiv. Now, Mephoshim talk about, Rishonim talk about, so why are you allowed to chop wood on yomtiv anyway? I mean, First of all, you could have done it before Yom Tov. You could have chopped it up before Yom Tov. Second of all, isn't there an issue when you're chopping it up that you're going to be cutting it into small pieces and then we'll be doing a malacha of toichin? So that's
grinding.
Toichin is grinding, but it includes cutting anything into really small pieces. For example, when you're making a salad on Shabbos, let's say Yom Tov, it might be a different issue, but you're not allowed to cut the vegetables into really small pieces. And Shulchan Aruch talks about, I don't remember how small or small, but there's a limitation. Yeah. So over here, you have two issues. So as far as why you're allowed to chop wood on Yom Tov, why we don't say you could have done it yesterday. So the Ravid actually says that in Hilchos Yom Tov that actually chopping wood is a tzorech oichel nefesh. No, not b'di'evet. He's saying that the same way as you're allowed to cook on Yom Tov, even though you could have cooked yesterday, the same thing. You're allowed to chop wood on Yom Tov, even though maybe you could have chopped it yesterday, because you need wood for cooking your food. Without it, you're not going to have food.
Yeah, but you would have prepared it before Yom Kippur.
So if you could have, then you could have. But the Raiva is saying that's not an issue. That's not an issue. The Ran puts it a little differently. The Ran says you would be allowed to chop wood on Yom Tov. The Ran says granted. When you're talking about wood for cooking your food, maybe that's not Oichel Nefesh itself. That's Machshira Oichel Nefesh. And we learned the other day that Machshira Oichel Nefesh, even Rabbi Yehuda, who allows them on Yom Tov, says that no, if you could have done them before Yom Tov. The difference is, though, the Ran says in this case you could use wood on Yom Tov to make a bonfire to warm yourself up. That would be considered Eichel Nefesh, to warm your own body. Once you're allowed, again, we use the rule of Hoyle, once you're allowed to chop wood for that purpose, then already you're allowed to chop it for cooking your food as well.
Directly.
Right. So
it's not directly towards that we're allowed to do it for cooking food, but only because we can do it for...
Only because we'd be able to use it for a bonfire. That's what the Ran says. That's what the Ran says. The Ravid just says that it is actually an Eichel Nefesh thing itself. And therefore, he says that the Torah empowered the Chachamim to determine what's allowed of Eichel Nefesh on Yom Tov and what's not. And they decided that this is allowed because you need to cook your food.
Directly or indirectly.
As far as the Tochen issue, so in fact, in Shulchan Aruch, it says that you have to make sure not to cut it up into small pieces. If, as you're chopping it into large pieces, you get some small pieces, okay, you know, that can't be helped. But you can't deliberately go intending to chop it into small pieces. And actually, the truth is, it talks about Shulchan Aruch, that it's not so simple, this din of cutting, of chopping wood on Yom Tov anyway. If you're able to use the wood just as well for cooking or whatever without chopping it, then you don't have a heter to chop it. The only heter you have is if it's, you know, if we're talking, it's a large piece of wood and you're not going to be able to make a decent fire with it without chopping it up. Then the Mishnah said, v'loy b'kardum, that you're not allowed to use an axe. We said three things. You can't use an axe, a saw, or a sickle. We said that you're allowed to use a kofet, a cleaver. Now, in those days, axes, and as Gemara is going to talk about also in a minute, cleavers, sometimes had two ends. The Steinsaltz has a good illustration of what an axe in those days looked like. The truth is, actually, I'll tell you afterwards what it said. Remind me afterwards what it said to tell you what it says in Shulchan Aruch about this. But for now, about this business of the various kinds of utensils that you can use to chop wood. But this he says they found it they found it in an archaeological excavation, or they found a picture of it in some whatever. Anyway. You can see then it's got a broader end, which is like an axe, and then it's got a narrower end. The idea was you'd use the broad end like when you're first splitting the wood, like, you know, cutting down a tree or whatever, or like, you know, when you're cutting a large log, and then you'd use the smaller, the thinner end when you're doing fine cuts afterwards. Yeah. This that was saying that you're allowed to use a kofet, that you're allowed to use a cleaver on Yom Tov to chop wood, is only if you use the nachvus, wide side. He's talking about the kardum, about the axe, that it's osur. When is it osur if you use the wide end of the axe, the splitting end?
Lush in the
cave, because it's broad and flat, as opposed to it coming to a point. But if you use the skinny end, then it would be mutter, because that's not normally what you use for chopping wood.
But the small one is chopping fine pieces, whereas the broad one is not.
No, but the point is you're not going to be using it to cut into small pieces, because just the small pieces is an issue with teichen. We're talking about, though, you'll use that narrow end. You won't be making a huge wedge in the log like you do with the knackless end. Rather, you know, you'll be doing, like, you know, little picking at it, kind of. But that you're allowed to do. Well, of course, the kofet's none. The Mishnah had said that you're allowed to use a cleaver, and the narrow end, the zachrus end of an axe, is just like a cleaver. No, a meat cleaver we're talking about, like you normally use for chopping meat.
The meat cleaver is round and long.
Okay, apparently meat cleavers in those days, they also came to a point. I don't know. So, shit, the kofet's done. The answer is Mao de Tema Hanimi Le Kofit before day. Yes, but you might say, when is the Mishnah saying that you're allowed to use something like of something that has a blade like that? Only a Kofit where it has only that blade. But if you have something that's two-headed axe, where one end of it is one and one end is the other, Ema, you might have thought, Midu de Haigisa Osir, since one end, the Nakbus end, the wide end is Osir, Haigisa Nami Osir. You might think that the other end is also Osir. Kamash Malon, that would be the Chiddush, that you're allowed to use the narrow end. We're not worried that you're going to confuse them. The Ika de Masni La Sefer, but then there are others who learn this verse as referring to the Sefer, not to the axe, but rather to what it said in the Mishnah as about the Kofit.
And according to the beginning.
Wait. Because we're going to say that cleavers in those times also sometimes came with a double-edged blade. Namely, according to this version, it's lachomera. Amar of chinin of hashlemi mishmedi rab loyshano ela bezachris shloy. When you're allowed to use a kofit, a cleaver, to chop this wood on yomtiv, is only if you're using the zachris end. Aba but nachris shloy also. But if you're using the nachris end, sometimes cleavers were also made with two ends, like these axes. That would be awesome. And again, the question is the other way around. Pshit dovelay b'kardim. So now, of course, the Mishnah said you can't use the axe. You can't use an axe, and the wide end of a cleaver is the same as an axe. And the answer is again, but in reverse. Now, to tame a honey mill kardim, you might have thought that an axe is osur. Aval kofet of kardim, but when it comes to something that has a cleaver end and an axe end, ema migu de haigisa shori haigisa nami shori. Okay, you might have thought since the one end, the narrow end, is mutter, maybe the other one should be mutter also. Because after all, a kofet, a meat cleaver, is not something that you normally use for chopping wood. Kamash malon, according to this version, that would be the chiddush that you can. And that second version is the one accepted as the halacha, so you can never use the wide end, an axe-like end. All you can use, rather it is like this. You can't use a kardum at all. You can't use an axe at all. Whether you use the wide or the narrow end. And when you're using a cleaver, if the cleaver has two ends, you have to be careful to use only the narrow end. Only the zachrus end.
Then you cannot use a wide end.
You can't use a wide end at all, and from an axe, you can't even use a narrow end.
And from an axe, you cannot use a narrow end.
Right.
Or for an axe, no, an axe is just...
Because an axe can be a double-headed axe, like this.
Double-headed.
Yeah. Now, in Shulchan Aruch, it mentions, so I mean, here, you know, Steinsaltz has a nice picture for us of what these double-headed axes look like, but, you know, it, as a matter of halacha, it's not so simple to understand how these things were shaped. And therefore, in Shulchan Aruch, it says, practically speaking, you can't really use any, the only kind of thing you can use, really, if you need to cut wood on Yom Tov, is use something like a knife or something like that, which is obviously never used for cutting wood, and then, you know, and there's no possibility of confusing it with any of the ones that are also. But the, you know, any of the different kinds of axes or cleavers or picks or whatever might be an issue because you don't know what's zachrus and what's nakrus.
The sword would be much now, right?
Sword would might be, I don't know.
In France, they had double-sided axes, large.
I know what
axes.
But there they have the double-sided axe. Both sides have the same kind of blade.
One is big and one is small, but it's the same type of blade.
Oh, okay. Okay. So then both of those would be nakrus, probably, according to this, yeah.
That would be also.
We just said that a knackwurst one, which is normally used for chopping wood, is out there, yeah. No, but you could have, it could have been also like those double-headed axes, you know, you could also be thinking of like those double-headed axes that they have, like in the bundle of fasces, you know, like the old Roman, the old Roman and later on Italian, the symbol of authority, that's a double-headed axe, but they are both ends of the axe are exactly the same shape. Both heads of the axe are exactly the same shape. So that would certainly be, that would be two knackwurst and that would be a problem then.
And that's a
kofit,
in other words.
That would be a real kardum, and it has both ends of it. A kofit is a cleaver. So according to what the Gemara is saying over here, a cleaver in those days usually had a narrow end. It looked sort of like a pick then.
So it's like this?
Yeah, I guess it came to a point. Yeah, I guess so. Mishnah says, if you have a house that is full of fruit, the nifchas, and then part of it broke open, you're allowed to reach in through the hole in the wall and take some of the fruit on Yom Tov. We don't say that's Muktzeh Machmas Isser.
It's literally a house full of fruit. I mean,
yeah, man, like a little building.
A little storage for fruit.
Yeah.
It's full of fruit.
Yeah.
And it broke,
so you're allowed to take. So Rashi says you would think maybe it should be considered Muktzeh because you couldn't get to it before Yom Tov. But as the Gemara is going to explain, the kind of thing we're talking about is it's built out of bricks or cement blocks or whatever that are not cemented together. So therefore, taking them, so therefore, even if you were to, the Tanakhama is saying over here, you can't actually take them out, because that would be, even though it'd still be an Issur D'Rabbanan, but if they fell out on their own, then already the fruit is not Muktzah.
Why would
you
be fruited?
Because the bricks in the wall are Muktzah. Well, you know what, let's learn the Gemara first
a little bit,
and then we'll understand it. Rameir says you're even allowed to break open the wall to begin with and take some of the fruit. So the Gemara asks, why according to Rameir, are you allowed to break open the wall? You're breaking open an oil. We're talking about that this storage house is not made out of bricks that are actually cemented together, mortared together. Sure, that breaking that down would be breaking an oil. Here we're talking about the bricks are just laid on top of each other, but with nothing in between them.
Like blocks,
yeah. Yamta, we're talking about. The truth is, some of these things we'll talk about soon apply to Shabbos as well. But wait. Yeah.
There are spaces between the blocks.
Not really spaces between. No, it's just one block on top of the other. Like, yeah.
So
there's nothing attaching one block to the other. So that's why Rav Meir is saying you're allowed to take them out.
Not really opinion.
Right. Masani, is that so? For Amr Rav Nachman, Hani Livni Di Yatim Binyana. Rav Nachman says that bricks that are left over from a building, Shadu Taltaluna Bashabbos, you're allowed to move them on Shabbos, however, Chazal Mizgalayo, because they're suitable for leaning on them, sitting on them, or whatever. However, Shaginu, if you laid them out in rows, like at the beginning of a new building, Badeachsinu, then there's no question you made them Mukta, and now they're off limits. So how in our Mishnah, granted it's not cemented together the bricks, but still they're arranged on top of each other as a building. How you're allowed to break it open? Rabzera says you're right. B'yomtiv, to answer your question, B'yomtiv Amar Avalei B'Shabbos. This din that we're saying that a mayor is allowing you to take out some of the bricks is only on Yomtiv, since the whole thing is only Osim Midrabanan. So it's a matter of Simchas Yomtiv. So therefore he's allowing it. But Shabbos you'd have the issue of Muktzah. Whereas the Chachamim would counter that we're not going to allow Muktzah in that case. What? Now, why aren't the fruit, so going back to why aren't the fruit itself Muktzah? So Rashi says, because, since as we just said, even if you were to take out the bricks, even according to the Chachamim, if you were to take out the bricks, you've only been over on an Issur D'Rabbanan. Because it's not a building, but rather Muktzah. So even the Chachamim and the Mishnah agree that if they fell down on their own, then you're allowed to take out the fruit. The fruit itself is not considered a
year.
Yeah. Tosfos says differently. Tosfos has a discussion that you only say that once something was Muktzah Bein HaShemoshes, it stays Muktzah for the whole Shabbos, only if the thing itself that was Muktzah still exists. Here, basically, the thing that was Muktzah itself no longer exists because you have a hole in the wall, therefore you're allowed to reach in and take. And Tosfos has a long discussion about the pros and cons of that. And then the Ramban gives a different reason. The Ramban says, basically, the fruit itself is not off-limits. You never intended for the fruit to be off-limits. There's something in front of it that's not allowing you to get to it. So as soon as that something goes away, then automatically the fruit was never Muktzah in the first place. Yeah.
That's the Ramban?
The Ramban says that, right.
He said
the Ramban says that there's nothing to talk about over here as far as Muktzah. Intrinsically, the fruit is not Muktzah. You just had something in the way that you weren't able to get to it. So as soon as the something that's in the way is moved, then automatically you're good. Incidentally, in Shulchan Aruch, the halacha either way, the halacha amounts to the same thing. If the wall, if there is a hole in the wall, then you're allowed to take out. In Shulchan Aruch, by the way, it points out that this would also apply if a guy took out some of the bricks, not specifically in order to do it for your sake. If he did, then that would be him doing a malacha for you, and it would be also on those grounds. But if he just did it on his own, then it's also considered as though it fell down, and you can reach in and take it.
And if a dog destroyed it, also to
the Bashan's also for dog, anything like that. Tani Nami Hachi, we learned similarly in Vraisa, Rameyer Emrah, Pochas Hachchila Venotel, that Rameyer says you're allowed to break open the wall of Hachchila and take, but Yomtiv Amr Avaloi B'Shabbos, and this only applies on Yomtiv because of Simchas Yomtiv, but not on Shabbos. Now related halacha, Amr Shmuel, Chosmet Shebakarka, sealed on things that are attached to the ground. Rashi says, for example, you have, let's say, an opening to a well, which is tied, you have a lock on it, which is tied in place with a rope, and then you have a lock or a seal on it. So it's attached to the ground. Matir, you're allowed to, on Yom Tov and also on Shabbos, you're allowed to untie the knot, It's always meant to be untied, so it's not a malacha of kosher and matzah. But it's not kosher shokayama, because Rashi says shayre also shayre lahatu tamadu also. It's always meant to be open and to be tied and untied.
In other words, a double knot. Yeah. It's still meant to be open and closed.
But you're not allowed to be mafkia. Rashi says the mafkia means to untwist the rope. That you're not allowed to do on Shabbos.
The rope. You mean the rope components?
The fibers in the rope. You're not allowed to untwist the rope in order to get it open. But loy choisech, and you're not allowed to cut it, because since we're talking about that the rope is closing something which is attached to the ground, so then to do any of those things would be a malacha of soiser. Where it would be a malacha of destroying, because the destroying applies to things that are attached to the ground. Rabbi Hananel has a different explanation of the word mafkia over here. He says it means like breaking off the lock. And the Rambam, I believe the Rambam passes the same way as well.
It's a mesh lock.
Yeah, in other words, so you have like a lock that's tied onto the rope. So, or like a seal or something, like a clay seal or something that's attached to the rope. So mafkia would mean like to break it off.
Yeah, there's ring on the ropes.
Yeah. Sheva kalim, but if we're talking about a seal on kalim, on movable utensils, matir mafkiyav choisach, then you're allowed to untie the knot. You're also allowed to untwist, according to Rabbi Hananel, to break off the seal, v'choisach, or you can cut the rope, echad Shabbos v'echad yomtiv, whether it's Shabbos or whether it's yomtiv, because stira does not apply to kalim. So you can untwist the rope, or you can cut it. Rashi says it means untwist. Rabbeinu Hananel and the Rambam say that it means to break off the seal. But chosech, you can cut the rope. So the Gemara says, "Homani Rav Meir." Now that seems to be according to Rav Meir. Dama af perchas achil v'noitel. Rav Meir says in our Mishnah that you're allowed to break open, you're allowed to take out the bricks from the wall on Yontiv and take fruit. So by the same token, then he'd be saying then that these chesomis shvakarka that you're allowed to untie the rope or pligur rabbanan I skipped a couple of lines. Maybe the Gemara says I have a contradiction. Chesomis shvakarka, seals that are on the that are things attached to the ground, b'shabbos matir, you're allowed to untie them. Avolay matir avolay chesich, but you can't untwist them and you can't cut them. Fine. So far that agrees with what Shmuel was saying. But the yomtiv matir you're allowed to untie the knot or untwist or cut. Now, homani Rav Meir, now that part seems to be according to Rav Meir, to amach perchas achil of noito, that Rav Meir says in our Mishnah that you're allowed to take out the brick. So by the same token, he'd be allowed to cut this rope, which is closing something which is attached to the ground. But, upligu Rabbanan alei. But the Rabbanan dispute that. They say that you're not allowed to, yeah. Shmuel had said that the same rules of Karka apply on Shabbos and Yom Tov. The Hamani Rav Meir, he actually has an answer, sorry. The answer is, Hamani Rav Meir, that price is, according to Rav Meir, Da'amah Karka's Achil of Anoitel, he says in our Mishnah that you can take out the bricks and take the fruit, or Pligu Rabbanan Alei, whereas the Rabbanan disagree with that. But no, the Amri Rabbanan, so Shmuel would say, I say like the Rabbanan. So there's no stira from that price. Yes, the price says that there is a difference between Shabbos and Yom Tov. I don't agree with that, because the Chum say there is no difference. Question is, but do the Rabbanan in fact disagree with Rav Meir as far as seal attached to the ground? But we learned it right. The Chachamim do agree with Rav Meir about seals attached to the ground. That on Shabbos you can untie them, but you cannot untwist them and you cannot cut them off. And on Yom Tov you can do any of those things. So we see then that... We see then that the Chachamim, we see from this price that the Chachamim agree that on Yom Tov you're allowed to cut, etc. So how is Shmuel telling us then that the Chachamim disagree on Yom Tov, and therefore he's saying like the Chachamim, we see from this price that the Chachamim agree with Rav Meir that on Yom Tov it's allowed. Right. So it's did it Shmuel. The answer is, Huda Amaki Haitan. Shmuel is saying according to the following Tanya, a different Braisa. The Tanya, Chos Mishra Makaka Matu Avalem Rafiyev Lechosech, Echad Shabbos Vechad Yomtov, seals that are attached to the ground, you're allowed to untie them, but you cannot untwist them or cut them, Echad Shabbos Vechad Yomtov, whether on Shabbos or on Yomtov, Veshabakli, and if they're on a Keli, Veshabbos Matu Avalem Rafiyev Lechosech, if on Shabbos you're allowed to untie them, but not untwist, not cut, Veshabbos Matu Rafiyev Lechosech, and on Yomtov you're allowed to do any of the above, which agrees exactly with what Shmuel says. So, yeah, you have different prices. Yeah, it's another Tanner. You have different prices to say different possibilities, but at least you found the Tanner who agrees with Shmuel. Now, then the next question, which we'll leave for tomorrow, is the Gemara is going to ask, okay, so what about the fact that Shmuel also said that Shmuel talked about two things. Shmuel talked about one in Kauka, so fine, we found a Braisa that says that about Kauka, but Shmuel also said something about Kalim. That even on Shabbos you're allowed to untwist the rope or cut it or whatever. Whereas we have this last braisa that we just quoted says you can only untie them, but nothing on Shabbos, but nothing else. So we still have a stira between the second part of the braisa and the second part of what Shmuel said. So that we'll leave for tomorrow.
What are you untying? What are the things?
So you have like a door to a building, let's say. Or actually, the example that Rashi gave was like the cover on a well. You have it tied on with a rope.
Uh-huh.
You have it tied on with a rope, and you have like a seal or a lock or something on it.
Right. I can see that, like to access the storage part of a store on Kingston, you have these metal doors.
Yeah.
And sometimes they lock them up or they
tie. So actually, in Shulchan Aruch, it says this that we're talking about over here is as far as cutting or untwisting or whatever rope.
Yeah.
If it's a matter of breaking the lock, that's a whole different issue.
Right.
That you can't do.
Opening
the lock, of course, you can do. But to actually break the lock, that you can't do on Shabbos or Yom Tov.
Yeah, okay.
But here we're just talking about cutting a rope. Which is sort of like it's not really a permanent
like
thing.
Twisters.
Yeah.
Those zippies.
Yeah.
Like those zippies.
Yeah. One interesting thing before we leave it for tonight is there is this whole thing that we're talking about over here about building things that are or aren't permanent or taking things apart that are or aren't permanent, like we have these bricks these bricks that are not mortared together. This is one of the sources that the Achroni Aposkim talk about in connection with building things with Lego on Shabbos and Yom Tov. Lego is, on the one hand, I mean, they fit together, they stay together. On the other hand, they're not meant to stay together permanently.
Right. But they're attached.
They have the little studs to attach them together, sure, but they're not meant to stay permanently together.
No.
So in that sense, it's like these things that are meant to be constantly tied and untied and whatever.
Also,
so
not something to dwell on.
That's neither here nor there. It doesn't have to be something to dwell under. You're not even allowed to open up a baby carriage. First of all, there have been people who built sukkahs out of Lego.
Right.
Second of all, for example, we know that you can't open a baby carriage canopy on Shabbos if it wasn't partially open before Shabbos, even though nobody lives under there. And it's still making an oil. Right. As far as the canopy, sure, yeah, we talked about that on Shabbos. But so as far as Lego, so you have it. Moshe Feinstein talks about it. Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach talks about it. It's partly based on this Gemara. So one conclusion they come to is they talk about. I think Rav Shlomo Zalman says that it's not so bad if kids play with them, but adults, kids over bar mitzvah shouldn't. And Rav Moshe is not even, I think, doesn't even really agree with that so much. He's not even sure whether kids should. But at least it's not an absolute malacha opinion, obviously, because it's not meant to stay permanently. But
blocks
is not an issue because they just stack on top of each other and they don't connect in any way. We're talking about Lego that actually connect together. Yeah.
I remember.
Oh, my 2-year-old loves knocking down the blocks.
I went to the MCSY director's house and his son would always be playing with Legos.
If you look in Shmiras Shabbos Kil Chasa, which Shmiras Shabbos Kil Chasa mostly follows the Pesachim of Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, he says that, Lego should not be played with on Shabbos, but you don't have to prevent kids from playing with it, kids below Bar Mitzvah.
Yeah,
he wasn't. Right, so then there you go then.
Putting some ice cubes, one on top of the other, and then covering them with water, we used to do that.
Even the cups, can you close the cups to build up the
conceal them.
You mean it melts the ice together?
It freezes the water.
That's what I'm saying, yeah. And that might be a different issue of making. There's a different issue as far as making ice on Shabbos. That's a whole different issue. That's an issue of motivated. But that's a whole different.
That is a problem. I thought if you're going to use it on Shabbos, it's not a problem.
So if you're going to use the ice on Shabbos, then and you can't do without it, then the poskim will say that you're allowed to. But yeah, basically.